Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Welcome to Listen to Older Voices. I'm Rob Greaves, and it's a pleasure to share another Listen to Older Voices story with you. Margaret Healy was born in 1936 in Melbourne. In part one, we learned of her early years. The daughter of a timber worker, she lost her mother at a young age, and her older brother Bill took her under his wing. In part one, we also learned of her school experiences and her first job. But this week, this amazing woman who doesn't mince her words and is a real down-to-earth Aussie talks about how she meets and marries Mick, who's also a timber worker. She shares a touching story of how her boss not only supplies her wedding dress, but her bridesmaid's dress. The story of her move to the timber town of Hayfield is a story of a town culture that almost totally revolves around drink, which wasn't a life that she was happy with. She has to deal with the death of her husband, and in her own grounded style of philosophy, she shares with us how she turns a negative into a positive. Margaret works doing a mail run, whilst also looking after her elderly stepmother, and we just learn to become in awe of this woman. In a day and age where so many try for pseudo-sophistication, Margaret reminds us of the delights that an honest, unassuming Aussie can provide. We pick up with Margaret talking about her husband Mick and his work as a timber worker. That's taking him away from you, though, to Hayfield, isn't it?
Yeah, but I wasn't married until after that.
No, I gathered that. So did the relationship still happen while he went out there? Or did
no, he used to come home every weekend.
He'd come home to you?
Yeah, from New Jersey they did, because it's not very far.
Yeah, but what about Hayfield?
Hayfield, they come home every fortnight.
Okay.
Yeah, every fortnight came home. We did go to Hayfield for 12 years because of Doug Walker. He said, I want the three of you, you know, and because they were good fallers, you know, and good tractor drivers. All had their licence for tractors, D6s and that. Anyway, he said, I want you over there. So he was over there and they were over there for a few months before we got married. And Doug said to Mick, he said, is Marg coming over once you get married? And he said, I don't know. He said, I haven't asked her, but I'll talk about it the weekend. And Doug said, well, I'll buy you a house in Hayfield to keep you here.
Wow.
And he said, I want you up that bush, he said, and I'll pay for the house. It was only a little place, a bit longer than this. But he paid it, I think, £600.
So do you remember when Mick asked you to marry him?
Yeah. We got engaged on the 22nd of August years ago. And, a few months after we got married, because Mick been away all the time, when Doug come to the thing about this house that he bought for us, we wanted to get married in the June. We got married in the June.
Were you expecting him to ask you, or was it a surprise?
No, it was a surprise. Oh, it was a surprise. We were engaged for a while, but I didn't want to get married too young because Mum said don't get married too young, you know.
Yes.
I mean, some of them get married at 16.
No life.
No, so. I went back to work for a while and I had a job here. Yeah. And I had a lovely family in North Bowen that I went down there and stayed there full time because used to camp down there and everything.
When you say you had a wonderful family in there, your own family moved
to
Bowen?
No, it was a family, a Jewish family.
How did you meet them?
And, my sister-in-law had a job and she got married, so she passed it on to me. And anyway, I went down there, yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Brown their name was. And anyway, when they found out, they gave me my own room. I had my own room and everything. I used to babysit the kids of a Saturday night if I wanted to go out. And they were very good to me. They really were. But I had to be careful. I was allowed to have a meal with them most of the week, but not Friday night.
And, is that because of their religion?
Yeah. And Jews put a candle on the table.
Yes.
And you're not supposed to blow it out, which Margaret did, but oops. She told me about it, so I was happy, you know.
Yep.
And then they used to have bar mitzvahs for the boys that grew up 17 or whatever. And I used to come home every second week And Mick used to take me back on the Sunday night, and then he used to go back to the bush.
Gee, it was a strange way to have a relationship, yeah, wasn't it? It was almost like a relationship by mail. Because Did you, you and Mick ever go dancing or anything like that? Were you dancers?
He was a dancer, but I really wasn't. And then, of course, those days in the Seventh-day Adventist church, you sort of didn't go dancing.
That's
much,
right.
You know?
It was frowned on then, wasn't
and,
it?
Yeah, yes. I used to go with a... Oh, I went a couple of times down here, square dancing that came in, and I went with a girl up this when I was working up the hospital up here, girl Mathers, and she wanted me to come one night. So I worked for worked down at Bourne for quite a while, and I did say to him, I will be leaving, and later on, and I said, I'm getting married. So he was sitting at the breakfast table one morning, Mr. Brown was, and he said, Margaret, he said, would you like to come into Melbourne, he said, tomorrow on your way home? And he said, come down to, where was it? I can't think of it now. He said, come down to my factory, and gave me directions and that. He had a big factory there, and he used to do frocks for Rockman's.
Oh, okay, yes.
And he said, come down to my factory. He said, you can come down. And he said, you're having a bridesmaid. I said, only my sister. And he said, you pick out a wedding frock, and you pick out a bridesmaid's frock. Uh-huh. And he said, you take that home. He said, I got that for $20.
£10. But then in some way it was partly a gift, wasn't it?
Because it
that
was.
Price, it was like a wedding gift.
Yeah,
yes,
because
it would have been a lot more than
and
that.
And he said, you try on what you want to do.
Oh, how nice.
It was just... Oh,
yeah, that must have made you feel really good.
Oh, it did. And my sister, when I came home with this beautiful pink frock with a big white lace, you know, collar, and when I said to Lois, I said, well, I've tried it on, and we're about the same size. And, we came home, we got married in the June, and then we went out to Hayfield. But, when I brought it home for Lois, I said to Lois, I'm only going to have one bridesmaid. And I hope it fits you. That's all I was worried about, you know. Anyway, she put it on. It was perfect.
Ah,
absolutely.
Some things
perfect.
Are meant to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she had that frock for years. And... when we sort of went to Hayfield, we lost sort of touch because I lived at down at Lilydale somewhere. And there was a lady shifted in one of the places down here about 10 years ago, 10 years ago. And she said to me, we're talking about Lois one day because she knew them too. And this lady said to me, she said, Lois thought that was absolutely lovely that you gave her that frock for my wedding, you know. And,
that's terrific.
Yeah, it's really good. And I still ring her every now and again and see how they
Was it a good wedding?
Yes, it was a good wedding. Very small
of
in the
course.
Ringwood Church,
yes.
We went down there because there was a few busybodies in Yarra Junction, sort of, that, you know, would talk about you perhaps. But I said, no, we'll get married down there. And we got married in the Church of England or Methodist Church. Mm. And it was closer down there because we were going to go through Melbourne and then go just for a trip round up to Albury and things like that. You couldn't afford an expensive honeymoon in those days. And then we come over the Akron Way and Mick's father was working up there at the time. And we called in and seen him and then came home to Mum. Mm.
Wow. But it must have still been a lovely experience for you.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah,
yes.
It was good. Yeah.
So then
I hadn't
you...
been to Albury.
No. And that would have been quite a journey in those days because public transport and roads and everything weren't in good condition.
Yeah, well, Mick had a Zephyr car, so he always...
Oh, he had a Zephyr, did he?
Always had a car.
Right.
Yeah, his Zephyr was his baby, it was, you know. Yes, no, I... didn't make many friends at Hayfield because I found that Hayfield was it wasn't any good for me because I wasn't used to drink.
Right.
And you'd see the women go to the pub with these little kids. I know one woman used to go with her kids. She had five kids. And my sister-in-law used to go with her. And they'd stay there all day, especially on a Tuesday because it was endowment day. And I'd get that endowment was spent at the pub too as well. Anyway, Mick said to me, he said, even before we were married, he said to me, don't go to the pub with Joyce. He said, or are you going to the pub with Joyce? And I said, no. I said, I won't go to no pub. I've never been brought up to drink.
No.
You know?
No.
And I said, I wouldn't belittle you and I wouldn't belittle my kids, you
Good
know?
For you. Yes.
And that's the one reason why I didn't like Hayfield, because it was a drinking place, you know? And... I didn't say anything about Mick going and having a drink with his brothers because that's his brothers and that's their Friday night drink and And he's entitled to that. They worked
hard. Of course. Was Mick lucky enough to get through his experiences in the timber industry without any accidents? Because
His brother was killed. Yes. Yeah, his brother was
killed. In a timber accident.
Yeah, that was an accident. And the thing was there, years ago, if you drove a tractor, everybody would say to Doug Walker, perhaps the boss, oh, you've got to have a hood on it.
Yes.
You know, you must. Steel hoods. And Mick had one on his tractor, and Bill didn't like driving the tractor. He said, I'd rather fall trees or load them, you know. Right. It was just loading them, you just in the same area, you know.
Yes.
And Bill didn't like tractors. Alan, he'd make a tractor crawl up the wall. He was he was older than Mick. And he'd make a tractor crawl up, he'd drive it anywhere. And he wasn't so scared on him, but Bill was, you know. And of course, Bill was married to this girl that had these five children, and my sister-in-law. And they told the faller, they said, don't fall that tree that's right up on top of the hill. The boy Jennings was working for them. And all right, you know, and I don't know what happened, but the boy, Rob Jennings, he fell it and it went right over Bill's tractor and killed him.
Oh.
You know? Yeah, shocking it was. It was terrible, you know. We felt sorry for the family.
Of course.
You know, she had five kids to look after and what have you. But in those days, anybody killed in the bush and you sort of take it to court, as Doug said, take it to court to get some money to keep the kids, you know. And Doug was pretty good too. He'd write a check out for her any time at all. And anyway, she had to go to Melbourne and fight this court case. And those days, they'd be lucky to get 10,000, you know.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah. And so she shifted from Hayfield and she married Bill's brother, Alan.
Mm. Small world, isn't it?
Yeah, small world, yeah.
Listen to Older Voices. Revisiting through recollections. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Margaret Healy. And Margaret is sharing with us stories of what her life was like as the wife of a timber worker. So you must have been pretty happy when you left Hayfield then.
I was very happy for one reason. I used to talk to Mick on a Friday night. And I'd have a cup of tea, I wouldn't have coffee, I'd stay awake all night. I'd have a cup of tea and he would have a beer. And we used to talk about things, what the kids done during the week. And Mick used to say to me, I didn't like the way Kenneth spoke to me, you know, and all this, because Kenneth's very much like me, of course. And I said, oh, that's all right, we'll fix that. And I used to tell him things that if he said something, I didn't like you doing it. But that was the only time we could, because the kids were all around and, you know, and there was other people around. And we used to speak every Friday night and have a good talk. And after Bill was buried, we come over here. And I said to him one night, I said to Mick, I said, well, the timber's going to finish in Hayfield, which you'll know that it has. There's only Porter's Mill where I lived. That's just about had it, I think. The timber's going to finish. And I said, these four kids have got to have a job. So I said, you've got three boys and one girl here, I said, and we've got to have jobs. And you're going to have a job because you're not going to have a job in the bush there in years to come.
Mm.
And so anyway, I said, we pack up because my mother lived at Montrose at the time, my stepmum, and Mrs. Healy didn't have Mr. Healy at the time. He died at 85, I think. He was a bushman too. And anyway, she said, Margaret, she said, would you come and live with me? And I said, well, I said, I'm not too sure how the kids will be, you know, whether they'll get on your nerves. Oh, no. Well, she had 10 kids anyway and lived to 101.
Good Lord.
So she would have been used to kids.
Yes,
you know?
I think so.
101, I looked after until she was 98.
Wow.
And anyway, I came over and I had a talk to her and I said, Mum, I said, I'm worried about the kids, that they'll be no. She said, it'll be a bit more in the house and it'll give me, you know, something to think about, sort of, you know.
Yes.
So anyway, she was going blind. That was another reason. So anyway, I said, okay, all right, we'll come over. So we packed up and we came over. And Mick got a job at Border Works, and Timber, there was Timber here at the same time too. Anybody take him for a day or a couple of days. And the boys, yeah, they got on Border Works, the three boys. Yeah, they all had a go at it. And my daughter got a, she got a hairdressing apprenticeship. And she's a hairdresser now, and her daughter's a hairdresser, and I've got one out the road to hairdresser, so I'm right. So when we came back, we all got jobs, you see.
Yes.
And I was hanging out the washing down here at the old place there one day, and Diane Bohr had the mail run, and she said, "Marg, I want to see you." And I said, "What for?" She said, "Do you want a job?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, I wouldn't mind the job, you know." Anyway, I said, "What does it entail?" And she said, "Oh," she said, "it's, well, you know where everybody lives," which I did, you know, from school days.
Of course.
And she said, "Go down and see Arnold and Joyce Moore." And she said, "Tell them that you, you'd like to take it on." And she told me, she said, "You start at 9 and you finish about 1:30. So it was only the half day that I had to leave Mrs. Healy on her own.
Right.
So therefore, I thought of a good thing there, because I used to go down and get my mum sometimes, and she'd come back and stay with mum, and I was relaxed that somebody was with her, you know.
Yes.
So anyway, when I used to go to work of a morning, I used to, I didn't give her the sharp knives, her being blind. I put the wireless on the table. She listened to the Melbourne news. Me on the mail run for 3 or 4 hours. I knew all Yarra Junction.
Yes.
And she knew people in Yarra Junction.
So it worked perfectly.
Yeah, it worked good. And we used to have a sandwich together and our cup of tea, and then I used to have half an hour rest sort of type of thing. But there was some things she couldn't do, but the other things I let her do. And I used to say, "I'll let you do this, Mum, because otherwise you don't want me sitting down all the time, you know." Mm-hmm. And then Thursdays I used to come home and she'd be dressed. I'd say, "You're dressed in a nice dress." And I said, "We'll go down and do some shopping." But I wouldn't take her with me. I took her down to her daughter's place at Mount Evelyn. And I said to Dosh, "You can give her lunch and what have you." And I said, "I'll go and do shopping." Well, if my mum wanted to come with me, she was more active than Mrs. Fairley, a lot younger, of course. And I used to go and I used to pick up my mum and we'd both go shopping together and have afternoon tea.
Right.
That way you're sort of looking after both mothers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just sort of sit and think and work things out, you know. If they don't work out the way I'm thinking, I turn them around.
How long did you do the postal run for?
10 years.
Well, that's a good innings.
Yeah,
yes.
Just on 10 years. I gave to a young girl from Don Valley, I did.
Right.
She wanted a job.
So how old would you have been when you stopped being the postie? Roughly. I mean, were you in the 50s?
I was 32 when I came back from Hayfield. So I would have been about 33 when I took it on.
So oh, so in your 40s.
In your 40s.
Yep.
Well, I was only 48 when Mick died.
Okay. Mm. How did that happen?
Well, he was smoking at the time. He always said he only smoked of a weekend because you couldn't smoke in the bush during the week because of fires.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see? But Alan Healy used to. He'd smoke in bed at night time, 2 o'clock in the morning. Alan, I'm talking about you, but I know you're not with us. And anyway, I would have been in my 40s, so 48. I gave the postal round up because I said to Mick, "We want to go for a trip. We both worked for the last many years here, sort of, you know." And I said, "We'll go for a trip." So I said, "What we'll do is... we'll go down through the centre of Australia," because I knew he liked the bush and he'd want to see the centre of Australia more than anything. So, "No, I don't want to go any trip." He said, "Keep the money in the bank." And I said, "No way." I said, "We're going for a trip." So I knocked off from the post for after 10 years. I had a new boss down there at the time, which John's still there. He's a lovely guy. And anyway, I came home and I said, "Well, we're going to go for this trip, you know," and we argued a bit about it on a Friday night and that. So anyway, what I used to do then, I used to say, "Well, I'm going to go anyway. I'd like to go." And I said, "You go by bus, you don't have to drive.
Mm.
And you can just go and have your meals and your sleep and everything like that, you know." So anyway, I knew he'd enjoy it after he came back, really. So anyway, he said, "Oh, yeah, well, anyway, we'll think about it." And I said, "No, we won't think about it." So I got Kenneth out the road there and I said, "We're leaving on such and such date. Come and pick your father up at 6 o'clock and we're going to the airport." I used to organise it for him.
Listen to Older Voices, revisiting through recollections. Where did you fly to?
We flew to Darwin for a start off.
Right.
And then we came back down by bus.
That must have been a fabulous journey.
It was a fabulous trip. And he loved it because he sort of helped the bus driver take the cases in for all the ladies. We met so many people on there. And, I used to go to, after Meg died, I used to go to holidays to their places, you know, up at Austinville, Ballina and all up there.
What was the best thing about the trip for you? What did you enjoy most?
I enjoyed the scenery. I really did because, I mean, I've lived in the bush all my life and there's some things up there that are not happening down in Victoria sort
yes.
of type of thing.
Yes.
And you see the outback and we went for a nice cruise up the river. Can't think of where that was there. Catherine Gorge.
Catherine,
yeah,
yes.
That's right. And we went for a nice cruise and, you know, and he come home, that was in the May, I think it was. Yeah, we went in May. And we, you know, he sort of really enjoyed it, you know, because he was doing something and then he'd come in the motel and the girls would come in and have a talk for me too as well, you know. We met a lot of people, nice people on there, you know.
Mm.
And anyway, we came back and when we came home, on the day we came home, turned around, he said to me, my brother's named me Buzzy. I don't know why, because I was a little sticky nose, I reckon. So that was my nickname. And he took to it and called me Buzzy, you know. And anyway, he said, Buzzy, he said, I think we'll go to Perth next year.
Just like that?
Just like that. He died on the 24th of November.
So he didn't get to Perth?
No.
And you were saying, was that cause for him, his smoking?
Well, not smoking. He didn't smoke. He didn't smoke as much as his brother. But he used to drink a bit heavier. And I used to say to him, give it away, you know, because he wasn't well. He was sort of, well, he was down there one Sunday there and he took a turn. So I just jumped him in the car because we never had an ambulance to see those days. And I dumped him in the car and I could see him getting sicker because I think he was full of sugar because of the beer, you know. So I took him over here to Dr. O'Doherty and said, come on, get over here and see Dr. O'Doherty, you know. Dr. O'Doherty said to him, he said, you're drinking much, Mick? And I said, yes, he is drinking a bit more than usual, you know. Anyway, he said, smoking? I said, no, he doesn't smoke very much. He used to only smoke for a weekend. So anyway, Dr. O'Doherty said, well, Mick, he said, it's him all over and that. He said, in your body, he said, you've got a pancreas gland. And he said, that's where the beer and that does not agree. So he said, give it away, otherwise I'll see you up Westburn Cemetery. He was deadly with him.
Mm.
See you in Westburn Cemetery in 6 months' time. He came home, he gave it up to 5.5 years. And he took it on again. And bought it on again. Yeah.
That must have been shattering for you.
Yeah, it was, because the pancreas gland, as Dr. O'Doherty told me, the pancreas gland heals up if you don't drink. And I got him the orange. They used to have Tang out. It was a powder.
I remember that.
Yeah,
mix of water.
And I used to mix that up for him, take to work and all that, you know. And Dr. O'Doherty did tell me afterwards that might have been a bit too much sugar for him, you know.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, it, you know, affects the pancreas gland and that's. He just came home one night and he said, I'm feeling real crook. And I said, well, you've got to go to a doctor or something, you know. So he said, all I want to do, he had a sister over at Ensay. He said, all I want to do is go and see my sister and Dulcie. So we were going up to a wedding up to Ararat, my stepbrother, his daughter got married. And anyway, we went over the top and down into Ensay and we got just to Swift Creek just before that. And I said, you're sick, aren't you? And he said, yes, I'm crook. And I said, well, we should have gone to the doctor first and then up to see Dulcie. No, he said, I want to see Dulcie. So anyway, I drove all the way. I wouldn't let him drive. And anyway, he got down to the to, we got down to en- to the to Swift Creek, and he said, "I'd like a pie." And I thought, well, you know, he loved his pies, and I just got him a fruit drink, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I came out and he drank it in the car and that. And I think it was the wrong thing to give him, but then again, his pancreas had gone, and the doctor said to me, it wouldn't have made any difference, Margaret, he said, you
I
know.
I doubt that one drink of fruit
one
juice.
One drink in the no. pie wouldn't have made no. any difference. So we got to Dulcie's, and he seen Dulcie that night, and he woke me up 4 o'clock next morning. I took him to Beans, the hospital, 2 hour drive, and I got him in the hospital down there, and the doctor checked him over, and I said, look, I said, I'll come back later on, because... Well, I had Dulcie's daughter there, so I went up and had a cup of tea with her, and I came back about 10 o'clock. And the doctor said, no, he said, I don't give him much hope. He's in a pretty bad way. And he said, I'm going to get an ambulance, he said, and just shoot him straight across to Austin Hospital, I think they took him to. And I was down. No, they took him to here first, but they only kept him one night. And Dr. White, he said to me, he said... he's very bad. He said, I can't handle it. So he said, I'll take him down to Austin Hospital. So I went down to see him the next day, and they said, if you've got too much sugar in your body, that you'll sort of say some funny things, or you're away with the fairies, you know. And he was away with the fairies. And, yes, he only lived about 5 days after that. Yeah, 52.
Mm. So young.
Yeah. And my father died at 52 too, so that brings it all back.
Next week, in the third and final part of Margaret's story, she finishes her stories associated with the death of her husband, Nick, and shares stories of her life after his passing. That's Margaret Healy, next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program, and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.